All right, welcome into the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Paul Leather Jr. here with my man Jason Williams, PX, Politics Extra, opining all over Cincinnati.com as we do. What's up?
How you doing, son?
I'm doing excellent.
You excited about baseball? I don't know why. I'm just small talking here, and I just start thinking about baseball.
How about this weather we've been having? Crazy, ain't it? No. You know what I do? I had the joy of I went back to Ohio U this past weekend, and they do a sports writers symposium every year. It's fun. It's a fun thing to do. But I drove back Saturday afternoon, and the first Reds game of spring training, Marty Cowboy on the radio. It's one of my favorite days. Is the first game to just go for a drive and listen to them on the radio. Every year I hope to do it, and I was so happy that it lined up this year that I had a drive to do, and you can catch 700 almost in Athens, essentially.
Yeah.
So it was I actually was really excited. It was cool. I didn't care a lick what they were talking about, but it was just great to listen to them.
The simple pleasures of life. You know, this hit me this morning. I was thinking about this, that my summer, I'm going to try to listen to as much Marty as I possibly can. Usually it's in the car or a Sunday afternoon when I'm out just working in the yard. I'll have turn the car radio on really loud. But now I think it's going to have to be even though I'm sitting in my house at night during the weeknights listening to Marty.
Seek it out. Yeah,
more so than it was. This is Marty's last. This is his swan song, his farewell tour. And
yeah,
want to soak that in.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, yeah, you're right. That is going on. Then it's like the first couple of games happen of spring, and then like off. I don't even think about it until
we guys that are never going to make the club.
Yeah, I always feel for our guys with Bobby Nightingale, Faye Man. Man, it's a long time to be out there in spring training. It's a lot of work. That's the one reason that baseball was always too tough. I was like, man, I can't do the 5 weeks of spring training in Arizona.
You know, that was the thing I hated the absolute most about. I covered baseball at the St. Paul Pioneer Press for 3 years, the Twins, and they trained in Fort Myers, Florida, which I renamed Fort Traffic Jamburg. And I'll tell you what, covering spring training. Now, look, you're a sports writer. It's a really great job. But the biggest pain in the butt covering baseball is no doubt spring training.
Yeah.
And specifically spring training in Florida, where everyone is so spread out and the traffic in that state is just ungodly.
Yeah. That was the best. That's the best thing for fans that go. And I do recommend, it's a great trip to go to Arizona and go to Goodyear. I recommend popping up to Sedona if you get a chance, which is, it's awesome. Catch a couple of Reds games, but you can catch the road games easily because they're all right around in the same area. Whereas in Florida, you got to go all the way over across
or all the way down to Fort Myers, up to
Clearwater. So yeah, that's one of the best parts about them being done. I recommend if you're getting sick of the weather and you just want to get away, man, doing a couple of spring training baseball games or just one. It's refreshing. Go up to Sedona, go do Camelback, you know, it's just an awesome place to go.
All my buddies, Trent and Mark Sheldon, Gordon Whitmire from Chicago sometimes, like all these guys tell me, like, you would love covering spring training in Arizona because
it's all right
just
there.
So easy to get around.
Yeah. So a lot to get to on today's episode. I told you last week, I'm so excited for this because I'm a big Bachfest guy. I love Bachfest. And Aaron Sharp is one of my really good friends. He's kind of at the face of a lot of things Bachfest, but also he is open. He's one of the owners of Lucius Q up in Pendleton, which is a really interesting neighborhood to talk about. So Aaron is going to come join us. We're going to talk about Bachfest. We're going to talk about Pendleton. We're going to him and I are going to share war stories from our time, both being when I was his assistant DJ at the Reds. He's been doing it for 20 years. I did it for about two or three backing him up. We'll talk about that. He's got a lot going on. He, of course, was with WNKU forever and was really the last man standing, reading off the scroll on the last day at WNKU. And really an interesting guy with Bachfest here. I'm really excited to have him on. So we're going to get to Aaron Jordan. joining
us. A man
of
many talents and
man, yeah.
Wearer of many hats.
Wear many, many hats. And this weekend, a very giant velvet hat that he wears as the leader of the Bachfest parade. So we'll get to that. Later on in the interview segment, we've got a reader email that we're going to get to. A reader sending into That's a Cincinnati Moment, which I really like.
A listener email.
Listener, reader, yes. They reader, listen. Listener. I assume audience. If you listen, hopefully they read as well. My man Phil has drop-ins. So we've anytime we maybe talk about something, like if I were to, let's say, talk about, oh, I don't know, the stupid streetcar. Yes, I love it.
I swear that was not my idea. Phil just rolled in today. Phil Didion, by the way, our executive producer.
Yes, yes, who has drop-ins now.
He's made this project and operation run so much smoother, and I get so much feedback now about how much better we sound, and got to give Phil a lot of credit.
All the credit, no doubt about it.
And Burl.
Is there
a drop in for Burl, by the way?
Yeah, we need one of those. We got to go record him just saying like God's Mac for like the God's Mac and Cheese or something like that, real quietly.
God's Mac.
Right. Yeah. I love it. I think it's something like that. Totally. Whatever he wants it to be, I think we allow him to pick his drop in is what we do. Well, that's coming up. Let's get to a little bit of topic of the week. And we've been talking on here a lot about development and the business community maybe not being thrilled with the way some big projects have been handled, namely the hospital situation, the FC Cincinnati situation, and what happened there. So you see that happening and you're like, because FC Cincinnati finally did get, it's in the bag now, right? I mean, there it is. It's in the bag now. They kind of pushed that through after all of the, and you were very critical as you know, I expected you would be for that situation. What has the effect been of this? I mean, and what is the next development project? Will that be hurt by what's going on? What's your take on that whole situation?
Well, it's very complex and multi-layered, and it involves uber politics and race and the clashing of classes. And my thing has been, because it involves all these very complex issues, is that we've now seen some real challenges pop up in very high-profile developments with the 550 million children's expansion back in the summer, fall of 2017, and then here in the past several months in the past year with the FC Cincinnati Stadium. And council really needs to tackle this as, how is Cincinnati going to do development, Cincinnati City Hall? And the reason why is because you're going to continue to have this. The city's growing. You're probably not going to see hundreds of millions of dollars worth of developments like we're seeing just in one spot. But you're going to continue to see developments happening in neighborhoods. You're going to probably, now with the stadium coming on, you'll probably start to see some redevelopment of residential areas in the West End, maybe even north of Liberty and over the Rhine in West End. And so council really needs to tackle, and I think we really need to bring in, I said over the weekend, I wrote in the column, to create a task force, even better yet, create a commission that includes developers, includes pastors, includes community leaders, neighborhood leaders. Who else am I? I mean, just that is very diverse and well-represented, and the conversation gets going. And the biggest takeaway is that people are worried about losing their homes. So you have that. You have people worried about their home or their property taxes going up. You have developers worried about whether they can come in here and do development and not be subject to a bunch of crazy rules, or that they're going to be forced by the government to hand over hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to neighborhood organization groups or other businesses. So you have some government interference concern from there. And so my big thing is, and I wrote the column over the weekend saying, like, somebody really needs to take the lead here and just get all this out on the table and start to have the conversation about how Cincinnati is going to do this moving forward. And the big thing is because if we keep going the way we're going, it's going to continue, I think, to drive some racial divisions. It's going to continue to drive concerns of neighbors, concerns of homeowners, concerns from developers, particularly developers who aren't from here, and they're looking at Cincinnati and watching the landscape of what's going on here. And I really do believe this, is that if we keep going down this path, it will stunt our growth. And it's such a competitive world, economic development, that developers can easily go to Indy or some of our peer cities, Columbus, Nashville, going down the list, St. Louis, and not have some of these obstacles and hurdles to deal with. And trust me, they're not doing this for charity. They're doing this to make money, and they can see less hurdles in St. Louis, make the same amount of money, if not more, then by golly, they'll go there.
And it would be such a wasted opportunity, because all the momentum and progress that has been made in turning OTR into this bigger than life thing, and even when with the stadium now being positioned where it is, where there you're trying to take advantage of the urban core and all the other development that has happened that has set you up for things, whether you're talking about North of Liberty or people that want to come and be a part of that. But if you don't welcome those people in and make sure that people know that we want people to come in and yes. build off what we've built, you're going to plateau here. And that's the worst thing that could happen, because the hardest part has been accomplished.
Yeah.
Creating an area that has this kind of buzz and young energy is what cities die to have. And so when you can get it right on the cusp, you've got to take it. You then got to be willing to take it to the next level and not have people point to past projects and say, you know what, as much as I'd love to be a part of that, I'm not going to, because dealing with the city or the county is too big of a pain. And you put yourself in that position now where it can go either way, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm not saying I think City Hall should play a role in this, because you have concerned citizens, and this is, again, this is an all-around concern here. You have lots of concerns from various different angles looking at this. This is not just I'm not saying this to just help developers or just help a neighborhood. I'm saying this to encompass all of these things so that everyone ultimately is happy or can come to some kind of an agreement on how projects are going to be done, and that it included voices from all over the community and different industries and neighborhoods and all that. And we made the decision that, hey, this is how we're going to do development moving forward, because what we've seen here in these last two major high-profile developments is that you've seen efforts kind of swoop in at the last minute or after the fact, after things were already planned and thinking that it was already on down the road. And then you had these roadblocks kind of thrown in later on in the process. And it's like, you know, what the heck is going on here? We cannot keep doing this and not have some kind of a consequence down the road. Consequences for our citizens, consequences for our growth of jobs and new homes and, healthy neighborhoods. And somebody needs to step up and be a leader and tackle this and take it on and say, look, we're gonna change how we're doing things.
Okay. Who is that? who needs, you tell me. Who needs to step? Who should be the one to? Is that a Cranley thing? Is that somewhere else? Is that fall on commissioners? Who should be the one to lead that?
I really, honestly, I've thought for a long time. I thought it would be a Cranley thing. Obviously, as the mayor and a pro development mayor, a mayor who has a lot of relationships with developers, who has a lot of campaign donations from developers. But a polarizing figure and who's upset some people in communities. And so is he the right guy to lead that? I'm not sure. He's a person who can get things done. He's a person who cares.
Did you tap into 3CDC?
Honestly, I thought of that too over the weekend after I wrote the column. I kept thinking about it. I'm like, why haven't we brought 3CDC in on these two big projects? Because 3CDC early on, they had their criticisms, but I think any organization that is trying to come in and redevelop a neighborhood that for decades had watched, you know, disinvestment, it's a hard thing to crack through. But I think 3CDC has certainly overcome a lot of that stuff, and they've done a tremendous job overall. I think you would overall give them an A for the work that they've done in redeveloping over the Rhine. And that includes, there's a big piece of that is including community engagement and walking alongside people who are being displaced. And I can speak from my own personal experience, having been in personal meetings with when I was a PR person at City Gospel Mission, which used to be in Over the Rhine. Well, 3CDC moved our organization from Over the Rhine on Elm by Music Hall to Queensgate, and they were right there every step of the way. I was in all these meetings with Steve Leeper, and I can attest to how he felt about that, and that he cared, and that he wasn't going to abandon the process, and that you know, there's a perception that some of these developers, they don't care, and they just want to come in and bulldoze all kinds of things, and they don't care who lives there and all that. And maybe there are some people like that, but I can honestly say 3CDC's not. And so they've I would think that you need to look at their model, and someone needs to kind of you know, leverage that.
Yeah, and so I agree, because the thing is, it's great to say let's get all these different groups together, but those groups will never just naturally come together.
Exactly.
They have to be brought together by someone with the ability to handle and manage all of that.
I totally agree.
Yeah, so that's to me, when we talk about what's next, I think you're right. I mean, what's next is finding the person that can affect, person or people that can effectively bring all of those groups to the table and know how to come out of the other side with a true action plan or whatever it will take to make sure that what's important for these communities gets taken care of, what's important for business gets taken care of, and to make sure that, you know, what's important with the government doesn't interfere and makes everybody happy. That's a
totally
big
agree.
Task. And who's going to step up
work.
And do it? Who's going to step up and do it? I think is, man, that's a big old boy.
It's hard work, but that's what you signed up for when you ran for elected office, that
correct.
You signed up to answer to the people. And I think there's enough concern out there from the citizens of Cincinnati that it's your job as an elected official to step up, take the lead, and tackle this. It is certainly a very high-profile issue, problem that the city is facing right now. And so it's on someone at City Hall or some people at City Hall to grab this and run with it.
Problem/opportunity, in my opinion, you know, depending on
because
what we were saying about where everything that has gone right to this point really has a chance of doing something extra special on top of it. You know, the perfect example is Bachfest, really. and not such a segue,
yeah.
Something that has been around forever but was just a forgotten sort of festival is now this massive thing because of what has grown up around it, which is the Over the Rhine community growing up around a thing that was there well before OTR became a thing. And now it's one of the biggest parties and weekends that we have down, especially down in Over the Rhine, where you get tons of people down. Nobody better to talk about that than Aaron Sharp. We're going to talk to him about Bachfest, about the Pendleton neighborhood explosion, some WNKU stuff. We'll talk about some Reds. Lots to get to with Aaron, who I'm just so thrilled was able to come and join us. So here's Aaron Sharp. All right, interview portion time here on That's Cincinnati Podcast. I'm excited about this one. I'm usually very excited. This one, I'm particularly excited. I actually mean it this time.
I was going to say, I bet you said it every time.
I do, but this one, I mean it. My guy Aaron Sharp is here. A little bit of background on Aaron. First of all, it's big for you. Bachfest weekend is here, and you are at the. You always get to dress up in your full traditional garb, traditional Bachfest garb every Bachfest weekend. I always enjoy seeing it. It has to, it lives in a corner of your closet that must just be like in like a shadow box or something like that.
That sounds way more interesting, but actually we just rent it every year.
Oh,
well, so, if I'm being truthful.
Yeah.
Maybe one of these days. Maybe, I mean, I've been doing this for, I don't know, 12, 15 years. So it's probably time that I do exactly that.
What would you say would be your official Bachfest title? Because I feel like you do so many things. You're just Mr. Bachfest at this point almost.
Well, no, I wouldn't say all that, but I've been the master of ceremonies for the blessing of the Bach and the that takes place. It's a ceremony that takes place at the end of the Bachfest parade. It takes place in Bachfest Hall, and
there's a scroll, right?
There's a scroll. Yeah. There's a proclamation.
Yeah.
There's dignitaries and dirndls, and it's just weird and silly. And Mr. Cincinnati, who I still think, I kind of feel like he's also Mr. Bachfest, really, Jim Tarbell. He's always there, and it's just a wild, wacky, good time.
I'm excited. So there's a lot to get to, because not only are you prevalent in Bachfest, which is this weekend, you have been like part of this growth in Pendleton, which is one of the most interesting neighborhoods to talk about that people don't talk enough about. And I want to talk about Pendleton with you, as you and Lucius Q.
I'd rather not there. Because I feel like it is actually being talked about too much now. I think we need to stop talking about it.
Stop. There's no more about coming to the neighborhood where your restaurant is. Don't want that anymore. I just the growth and what's happened. And you've kind of been on the ground floor a little bit in the second wave of the ground floor there.
It's like anything else. I mean, I'm joking, of course, but yeah, you build something in a cool neighborhood, and then all of a sudden everybody starts flocking to it, and they're like, oh, all these people are in my neighborhood now.
Right.
But as a restaurant owner, yes, please come hang out in Pendleton with us. One of the owners of Lucius Q, which opened, we're coming up on about a year now, this March, and to your point, it was basically you had the Nation Kitchen and Bar, which has been there for, I think that's coming up on 4 years now,
right?
I believe this spring. And that was it in terms of any kind of retail. You had Mr. Bubbles Car Wash detailing up the street, the Pendleton Arts Center, and the Vernon Bell Event Center. Other than that, in terms of like a restaurant bar, it was just Nation. And then Urbana Cafe, the coffee shop, opened up maybe 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And then at the beginning of 2018, everything just blew up from there.
Well, the park,
Three Points came in the summer. So it was Boomtown Biscuits and Whiskey opened up in February of last year. We opened up in March. Three Points opened in June. Chicks next door to Three Points just opened up just a couple of few weeks back. It's really just in the past year, just taken off, and it's been nice to see Polly Campbell, your friend and mine, wrote about Pendleton being, you know, the hot new restaurant neighborhood in Over the Rhine, and her restaurant issue at the end of the year. So yeah, we're proud. We've got some really amazing people doing amazing things in Pendleton, and we've got all the bees. We've got all the bees on Broadway. We've got burgers. We've got biscuits. We've got barbecue. We've got beer.
Bourbon.
We've got bourbon. So we're really kind of have you covered there.
And you're going to have BrewDog, right?
BrewDog's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to be putting their brewery right down at kind of at the bottom of Pendleton, right on that hill, right?
Yeah. So yeah. BrewDog will be on the very southern edge of Pendleton. And that is, yeah, that's kind of crazy, because BrewDog's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, they had that TV show a few years ago that they did on the Travel Channel or something, and they became big time out of Scotland. And I guess they opened up their American headquarters in Columbus, and now this is one of their first tap rooms outside of Columbus and the country that's coming to Pendleton.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're big in Scotland.
It's funny. That neighborhood, I just find, for people that don't really know, maybe they don't come down a lot or just go down to Vine Street or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically across from the casino up the hill up there. And it's sort of this, where it's different is it is mostly residential up in there. So you kind of dug in, and it has a bit of this residential feel, but now all of these great little places have opened up, and it's sort of been the expansion of everything that's happened in OTR, which I don't know that people, certainly when this project started however long ago, ever thought that you would be talking about expanding all the way up into Pendleton and that becoming a thing. It's a wild thing to even watch. I mean, did you see that? I mean, obviously you did a little bit in order to you know, plot that space, because you gutted just a absolute empty, busted up warehouse, essentially, right?
Right. There wasn't anything to gut.
Yeah.
We just took four walls and a roof, replaced most of that roof, and then went from there. But no, that's exactly right. And not to pat ourselves on the back, but we absolutely saw that long ago. And we saw it as something that we were excited for the potential of the neighborhood, but not because we thought it would become like Vine Street, because we knew it wouldn't. And that residential feel is exactly what attracted us to it. That neighborhood feel. It's like it's still truly a neighborhood. It hasn't been completely gentrified. It's got a really good mix of people, and it's not going to, we don't see it becoming much crazier than it is right now. I mean, there's going to be some more stuff coming in, but this is not the next Vine Street, nor do we want it to be the next Vine Street. All due respect to Vine Street, that's a great thing. But we purposely sought that space out because it felt like a neighborhood, and we felt like Over the Rhine needed to get back to having some kind of like neighborhood joints in the area. So even though we're technically not Over the Rhine, but in that neighborhood. So, yeah, and that goes back to the joke earlier about not wanting people to talk too much about it, because it is that still does have that neighborhood feel. And you know, we really appreciate that when we first started talking about that location. We went and we met with the neighbors, and we started talking to folks and said, what is it that you guys need and what is it you don't want and that kind of thing. So
can I go back to when you said there are some people that aren't sure what Pendleton is? Is it mm-hmm. Is it its own neighborhood, or is it mm-hmm. a sub neighborhood of Over the Rhine? Can you answer that?
It is its own neighborhood with its own neighborhood council.
So is it one of the 52 neighborhoods in Cincinnati?
Yes.
Then?
Okay. Yes. Uh huh. And so, in geographically speaking, and there's been some argument over this a little bit, but most people understand Pendleton as being a triangle on its side, hence the name Three Points Brewing Company, Three Points Brewery, by the way. So the triangle is Central and Sycamore up to Liberty, and Sycamore is the base of the triangle on its side. I guess you could just say that's the left side of the triangle.
It could be. It doesn't have to be on the side.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be side. Yeah. And then Liberty is another side of the triangle. And then the point is where the clock tower is near the 471 ramp where Liberty and yes. Central run together.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about Bockfest?
Please do.
Well, there's many. The Sausage Queen Festival is an epic thing that not enough people talk about here.
Agreed.
I love it. It was when I first moved back to the city, like almost 10 years ago now, which is a crazy thought. It was one of the first things I did. I had never even heard of it at that point. And in Over the Rhine, it still had a whole lot of what would we call it? Sketchiness to it at that point. We were talking 10 years ago. so I was like, "Why? What is this? Why are we going down here?" And I just remember going into Bockfest Hall and being like, what is this heaven, this mecca, this oasis in here? And then the ridiculousness of the Sausage Queen Festival and how great that was, and just one of the most entertaining things you'll ever see. But that's not my favorite part of Bockfest. My favorite part of Bockfest happens on every single Friday of Bockfest weekend before the parade, which is an incredible parade, by the way, where it's right around that 5 o'clock on a Friday. Traffic is beginning to snarl downtown as everyone's trying to get out. You know, they're in their suits, they're in their work garb, and there's just traffic, and they're just like, why can't I get across here like I normally do? And you see them like leaning out the window looking, and then they see a goat pulling a keg of beer go across the intersection. And it's just like, that's why, because this city is so ridiculous that there are monks and goats that are shutting it down right now.
Absolutely. And it happens right at 5 o'clock on Friday.
It's great. That's perfect, like,
that's
timing.
Right. That's right when they shut down the street in front of Arnold's.
Perfect timing.
Which is where the parade staging area begins. And that's always fun. Just the hour between the time that they shut down the street and the time that the parade starts, which is complete chaos and drinking in the street outside of Arnold's and people in costumes costumes, just running around looking for their friends, checking each other out.
And many dogs.
Lots of dogs and gargoyles and just monks on Segways.
And goats. Real goats, too, right?
Real goats.
Real goats.
Giant wooden goats, paper mache goats.
So many monks.
So many monks on Segways. My wife is one of them. And yeah, it's incredible. And I that's also, I'd say that's probably my favorite part as well. Just because there's so much excitement, like getting ready. Like, we're getting this, it's Bachfest, it's time.
And yes.
Are the goats, are these individual people bringing their own goats, or are the goats all from the same farm?
That's a little bit of everything.
It's
it's people bringing different goats. There's not, to be fair, there's one lead goat. Now, here's the thing, and I don't know if we've secured a new goat or not, because this is
you can't just bring a goat, right?
But yeah, you can.
You can.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. You got to register, but yeah, you can bring a goat.
Sure. You have to register your goat.
You have to register it for the parade.
Oh, okay.
I mean, back in the old days, you didn't. Back in the old days, you just showed up.
You just showed up.
And it was more of a just a glorified pub crawl. It wasn't so much a parade. It was not really organized. But now you're supposed to register. But the goat, the goat that most people think of, for years it was Schnitzel. From Sunrock Farm in Campbell County, Kentucky. And then Schnitzel would pull the keg of Bock beer ahead of the parade. Schnitzel passed away a few years ago. Schnitzel was replaced by Alfalfa, another beautiful goat.
Incredible goat lady here in the city.
And we're all excited about Alfalfa being back this year.
Where's Alfalfa from?
So also from Sunrock Farm. Okay. Alfalfa got knocked up.
Oh, no.
So she's not allowed to pull heavy carts of beer.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a pregnancy thing.
As of like a week ago,
goatless?
We were goatless.
No, man.
So we put out an all call.
You're putting it. Maybe this will help you.
Don't they have goats at Spring Grove Cemetery?
They might. Actually, I think they do. I'm not in charge of goats myself. I know Goble Park in Covington has some goats.
You were in charge of everything.
No, not in charge of everything.
Not goats.
No.
I mean, can we get in contact with the zoo?
You would think.
Get a zoo goat? Or are they not allowed out of the zoo?
They probably don't let them. Well, they take them out. But for a
special occasion like this, like Sam the Bald Eagle goes to the Red Stadium?
We'll have to call Fane.
Get Maynard on this.
For something so Cincinnati like this, come on. Cincinnati Zoo's got to be on board.
I haven't had an update on this. So my guess is it's probably been resolved by now.
We hope.
A week ago was a bit of a crisis, but all things Bachfest, it always just ends up happening at the last minute. Yeah. But I wanted to touch on something that you said earlier about, you know, you didn't know what Bachfest was when you came back to town, and it was in Over the Rhine when it was still kind of sketchy 10 years ago. What was 10 years ago? That would be 2009. Okay. Yeah. Do you know when Bachfest started in Over the Rhine?
Oh, when?
1992.
Really?
1992. Imagine a festival starting in Over the Rhine in 1992. It's now in its 27th year. And the story is that the person who put this on, who started it, she was a PR person for Schenling Hudepohl. And they were releasing their Bock beer that year, and she wanted to put together an event to kind of promote the release of this beer. And so she said, well, let's do like a festival. And she went to Mount Adams because it was the 90s, you know, right? Mm-hmm. And Mount Adams was a hot spot to be.
Yep.
And Mount Adams said, you want to do what? With a goat? No.
Can you imagine the goat having to go up to Mount Adams?
And they kind of laughed her out of Mount Adams. And she's like, well, now what am I going to do? And she's like, well, I guess Over the Rhine?
Right.
But there were these business owners, people like Jim Tarbell and Julie Fay, and these people who were in Over the Rhine on Main Street running businesses 30 years ago. We forget that there were these people working hard and doing all this stuff in Over the Rhine 30 years ago, and it's taken all this time for it to become what it is today. But I tell everybody when this comes up about Bachfest, people don't realize it's starting to come into its own now, and people are becoming more familiar with it. But for years, that festival was played a critical role in the growth of Over the Rhine. There would be bar owners that Jefferson Hall, the original Jefferson Hall, for example, back in the old days before Moorline, Bachfest Hall was a empty storefront. Bachfest invented the pop up. See, by the way, so every year they would have a Bachfest Hall in a different empty storefront and over the Rhine. Huh. And the whole point was to bring people into these storefronts and show them the space. And one of those storefronts was the original Jefferson Hall that was on Main Street. Jim Cafeo was at Bachfest and said, this place is great. We need to put a bar in here. And he opened up Jefferson Hall. So it's had a real direct impact on the growth of Main Street specifically, which then, of course, has expanded to Vine Street and now Pendleton.
Yeah.
And it's a cool story.
Yeah, as OTR grows up, this thing has become...
Well, now it's huge.
Now it's massive.
Now it's one of those things.
They had to renovate Bachfest Hall almost just to be able to hold. Now it has like a whole separate wing. It's like this whole.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely wild.
So, yeah, there's two big areas inside. There's also the festival tent outside. It brings in over 35,000 people over the 3-day weekend every year.
Bachfest 5K.
And all the people who got involved with Bachfest in the old days like complain about it now. Like, yeah. Oh, it's not what it used to be.
Right. That's when you know you really made it.
That's when you know you made it. Like, oh, they're sold out. You know, that kind of thing. That's how you know you've made it. But at the same time, almost pretty much all of our sponsors are local companies. It is still very local. I've always said it's the most Cincinnati of Cincinnati festivals.
Totally.
And it's just weird and funky and unorganized. And that's what makes it awesome.
Yeah. The Bachfest 0.05K this year
has
me excited.
Yeah.
164 feet, I believe.
I believe it's 164 feet.
So do you like the idea of, well, that's just it.
Oh, yeah.
If you like the idea of that surrounding the party of the 5K, right? So you get the shirt, you have the beer afterwards, there's the medal, there's everyone getting together, but the running sucks. This is for you. That's what I love. And I'm totally on board with, you know, I'm not going to run all 164 feet. I'll probably walk some,
sure,
you know, pace
sure.
myself. But I like the idea of actually being able to get a medal because my wife runs all these things and I don't get anything.
You're right. Well, and I'm with you and I feel the same way. And plus, I feel like most people are looking at this 0.05K and thinking, I don't really need to train or do anything.
But you do.
But so... I'm thinking, you know what? So 12 weeks ago, I started training. So I figured
you've been walking 164 feet every day.
I've been doing 164 feet a day for 12 weeks. And so I figure everybody else is going to go in thinking, this is no big deal. I've got this. Yeah. I'm going to smoke everybody.
You ready?
I'm expecting a new PR.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
What's the prize for first place?
I have no idea. Probably a beer.
I would assume everyone's going to get a beer.
No, they do have some neat, I have seen the medals. They've got some lovely gold medals and you get a t-shirt and it's also partly a fundraiser for the Brewery Heritage District. So.
Are you sad WNKU is gone?
Of course.
You were at the forefront of WNKU forever. And when it went down, it was like you were the man on the ship reading last rites.
I was literally the captain that went down on the ship. Yeah. There's no question about it.
You're the last one left.
It was a lonely last few weeks when it was just me in that studio, in that station. Of course I'm sad. I'm sad for the community that we've lost it. For me personally, yes, it was my career for 18 years almost, and not more than my career because it was my entire career. It was kind of my identity. And so, yeah, that was a little bit of a tough thing to grapple with. But when it's all said and done, the loss is, you know, 18 years working anywhere is a long time. So for me as a professional, that... Whatever, it's fine. I'll find something else. It's time to move on and do something else. But for the loss that it meant for the community was that's what's so heartbreaking is because there are still a day doesn't go by. I don't have people coming up to me and just saying some of them know me, some of them don't, or I don't know them, and they'll come up and say, you know, how much they miss WNKU and how sad it is. And, you know, I'm always trying to put on the happy face and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, things change and that's life goes on. And I end up being their therapist and hugging it out with them. Like, it's okay. Right. It's okay. But yeah, it was a real unique Cincinnati treasure that it's such a shame of what happened to it. And, you know, what are you going to do? You move on, but there's nothing like it.
I was going to say, it's not like something else has popped up to take its place, nor probably will there ever be.
No,
I mean, that
won't.
Kind of an outlet for local Cincinnati music, and that was so dedicated to that scene, it's just not something that you're going to see in the world of corporate radio.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's funny because people would come to me and say, well, why don't you start another radio station, get some people together and raise the money and start a new station. And you're a fundraiser. You can do this. Like, you understand that that was my job, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I've got to feed my kids. It's not like I can just make this my life's mission to be, you know, the messiah for WNKU. I'm like, if somebody wants to come to me with millions of dollars and do this and hire me to run it, sure, let's do it. But I've got to get to work and do some other things.
Right. One of the other hats you wear, Aaron, is you DJ at Great American Ballpark during the red season.
I do.
You do some public address announcing.
Yeah, predominantly my main role there is as DJ, and I am coming up on season number 20.
Wow.
Yeah, holy cow, 20th season.
Are you then involved in the players picking their walk-up music? I mean, you play it.
Yeah.
Do you ever get involved in that process?
Oh, sure.
Of
if they don't have a song that they want, and that's, most of them certainly have their own picks, unfortunately, because they're usually. But if they don't have something, then or you know, maybe make some suggestions, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's.
What would be your walk-up
music?
I was
Aaron's backup, by the way, and I have a good story revolving to that question. One day where I was one of my first times rolling solo, and Aaron's like, all right, just let him go.
Yeah.
Probably assuming I'm going to die out there. And I'm like, all right, I got this. 2 minutes before the first pitch, the phone rings. Oh. I didn't even know that phone could ring.
Yeah, Brandon.
Brandon Phillips. That's the Brandon phone. He calls because it's Mother's Day, and he has five specific songs that he needs for every at-bat.
Oh, sure.
You know much is going on Tupac? 2 minutes before the first pitch when you're DJing these games? He needs me to find them, and he goes, all right, I Love You, Mama. It starts at 1 minute and 14 seconds, and it needs to go through 1 minute. I'm just like, all five of them, so you have to go find them, cut them up
while you're already playing music.
He bats second, and it's like, dude, are you like in the on deck circle right now? How are you calling me? So I just remember, I don't know how, somehow I think I was able to get them done or whatever. And I just remember thinking, does this happen every time? And it happens more often than you think. But it was always Brandon.
Always
Phillips.
Brandon. All the best DJ stories involve Brandon, and he was always very. Very appreciative and polite about it, and was always thank you very much. It would happen.
No sense of timing.
He would go into the dugout between innings, and
this would be before the game.
Okay. Yeah.
So now, I assume there's a club phone in the clubhouse or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not to say that hasn't happened either.
Has it with other players as well?
It has happened with other players, and I'm not gonna name any names during the game. Brandon would do it before the game. It would be last minute, but it was still before the game would start, before first pitch. But yes, I have received phone calls during the game.
Guys are,
but you know, it's to be fair to the player. You know how superstitious baseball players are, and if they're not feeling something or it's not right, you know, they're looking for ways to make changes. And fine, fair enough. Call up, and all I can do is do everything I can to make it happen. And fine,
at least you weren't responsible as I was in the eighth inning of a no hitter for accidentally having a play call from Marty Brenneman saying Homer Bailey has just pitched a no hitter. There was a song. There was a song that was called Cincinnati Love, and it was made out of California Love, and it had old Reds calls in the background. And now, you know, the organist would play it, but it had these that played in the background. And so you say, oh, in this inning before the game, you slot. Oh, we'll play that in that ending. You're not thinking whatever. One of the calls in the background of that song was Marty Brenneman calling Homer Bailey's first no-hitter, which was in
Homer
Pittsburgh.
Pitching at the time?
Homer is pitching. Homer is pitching. It's the eighth inning, and he has a no-hitter going.
This
was an epic fail on my part.
That.
So all of a sudden, John is playing, the organist is playing, and it pipes in loud as can be. Homer Bailey has just pitched a no hitter, and everyone in the scoreboard room freezes, and we're just like, "What
Pin
did we just
drop.
Do? Just the absolute worst thing you could possibly
did
do."
Did we jinx it?
I have never been more nervous for three outs in my entire life. Thank God he finished off the no hitter in the ninth inning and got that done. Because after Dusty Baker was a manager, and they were showing the post game interview room, and he's like, "And somewhere the PA NBA was playing the stupid call for money.
That's right. They called Dusty us called out and out. Everything. Thank God that we did not actually jinx that. But that is like, that's just it. This is what I was merely a backup, and you haven't done anything nearly anywhere that bad over in your time. These things can happen.
Probably
though.
Not.
there's nothing worse than that.
I've certainly been called out.
Yeah.
I've certainly been called out. I got called out by a player once for I didn't play his song. He had been on the DL for a while when he came back, and I played Aerosmith's Back in the Saddle for his first at bat, and he struck out and was not happy with my song choice. I took a liberty to mix it up, and he did not appreciate
that. Don't take liberties.
But yeah, it's those things happen, but you know. So far, so good. 20 seasons, haven't been fired yet.
20 seasons, still there.
Aaron, I want, before we go, I got to ask you this. You have this awesome sweatshirt on that says Cincinnati is beer.
Yes.
Brown with yellow lettering.
This is actually...
Where's this from?
This is actually from the Brewery District, which is the organization that's behind Bockfest, that's building the Brewery Heritage Trail. So actually on the back, if I were to turn around, has that logo for the Brewery Heritage Trail on it.
It's cool.
Cincinnati is beer.
So this weekend is Bockfest. The Sausage Queen will be Saturday night.
Saturday night, I believe at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock is when the shenanigans.
The final main
the
event.
The prelims have been going on, which those are already behind us now. But that's one of the most maybe underrated thing that happens.
Oh my goodness!
Is the prelims, because they're terrible.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, think about like if you ever seen a Sausage Queen contest, they're pretty bad on their own. Like they're laughable in the type of stuff that happens oftentimes. That's the best of the best.
Yeah.
If you want to see the worst of those, go to the prelims, which is highly entertaining.
Yeah, there are six prelim rounds at different bars leading up to Bockfest weekend, where they choose the sausage princess. The winner of each round is chosen as a sausage princess. And then those six princesses go to compete at the main event at Bockfest Hall. That's this Saturday night at 9 o'clock.
You were able to host a prelim this year.
For our first one, first time ever, Lucius Q hosted the final prelim last weekend. The day before, I was a nervous wreck thinking, what if we throw a party and nobody comes? It ended up being our second biggest day since we've been open.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun, is the people who come out for it and cheer on the contestants. It's wacky. People come out with signs, and it's like it's just bizarre.
It's just like all of Bockfest. Mm-hmm. It's very bizarre.
Anyway, and all that, you can find out all that stuff at Bockfest.com.
Yeah, Bockfest.com. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the 05K, and mm-hmm. people are down there, so it goes on all weekend down in that end of over there at Bockfest Hall. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun.
We'll talk to you later. All right, much thanks to Aaron for joining us here.
That was fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Aaron and I really became quick friends when I worked over at the Reds, and we both like he loves Cincinnati more than I do, and I'm like Mr. Cincinnati, and so we always I feel like are bonding over neighborhood revitalizations and cool events that happen. The weird, we like the weird corners that not enough people talk about of the city. And he lives in those, man.
You know what Bockfest is?
Do I know what Bockfest is?
Yeah.
I would hope everyone does now after that segment.
It's so Cincinnati.
It is. It is as Cincinnati as Cincinnati. That is as Cincinnati as it gets.
It's so Cincinnati.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Speaking of,
we have a reader so Cincinnati moment, right? Or listener.
A reader, listener.
Reader slash listener.
Listener. Our email this week comes from David Wright, and he offers up not a question, but a Cincinnati moment of the week.
I like it.
His Cincinnati moment of the week is, and David says, attending the Eric Church concert, he starts singing Fins by Jimmy Buffett. The Eric Church fans start singing Fins with hand motions. Eric Church stops the concert in disbelief after the song and congratulates fans on their choreography. Cincinnati loves them some Jimmy Buffett.
That really is. Where do we know where the origin of this city loving Jimmy Buffett like out of control comes from, outside of like our drinking culture? Like, is that it? Why? What is it about this city that loves Jimmy Buffett and he loves them so much?
I feel like I used to know this. I was a huge Jimmy Buffett fan in college and in my early adulthood. I went to like one summer. I think I went to like 4 Jimmy Buffett concerts.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
it was insane. One of them was at Riverbend. or maybe two of them. Because he used to come here and play like an entire week.
Yeah, he would do a week, and all the people out drinking the margaritas and stuff would just be just spilling into the streets out there by Riverbend. It's just brutal.
Spilling into the streets, into the river.
God knows where. I mean, dude, if there that files under stay as far away as possible, if you're not trying to be in that world, do not drive near there. Definitely don't drive near there. That is unsafe.
It's an interesting culture. I just remember just being like, I mean, it's super binge.
If you have an answer, if you're listening right now and you have an answer as to why you think Jimmy Buffett became such a huge deal here in Cincinnati compared to, because he would always play more of like concerts here than he would at almost any other place. So if you know, if you're listening and you have an answer, please send it. Where can they send it, Jason? Send it to you.
Send it to me at jwilliams@inquirer.com.
jwilliams@inquirer.com. Or if you have a Cincinnati moment of the week, send us that. If you have a topic or question that you'd like us to tackle, or if you just want us to shout you out, send Jason your email. You can, of course, always hit us up on Twitter at Paul Daner Jr., at jwilliamscincy.
Yep, with a Y.
With a Y, which I don't like that you use the Y. I'm an I guy. Yeah, I like the I on the end. I don't like the Y. Because the Y is not in Cincinnati.
Yeah, but the Y makes it kind of stand out as its own
sort
of word.
Yeah, I don't like that. I like Cincy with an I because that's what it actually is, personally. That's my own personal taste. I know I'm in the minority, and I'm okay with it. Me going on this rant really should be my That's So Cincinnati moment of the week because this is how I feel. Okay. But I do have a real one.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do have a real one. So my That's the Same moment of the week has to go back to attending Hamilton last Thursday.
That's a great city.
What did you guys do up there?
I
mean, it's funny. This actually should be the That's the Same moment. Inside of the playbill for the show Hamilton that is currently showing downtown at the Aronoff.
Is it named after the city of Hamilton?
There is an ad that says, you've seen the show, now go see the town. And it's an ad, double truck middle of the playbill ad for Hamilton, Ohio. And it has whatever the Hamilton, Ohio website is. Sorry, Hamilton, I don't remember it.
Kudos to the marketing and PR people at the city of Hamilton.
Kudos to the Hamilton. I don't know what they have to market necessarily, but kudos to them for popping it in there and being like, hey, come see us. We are Hamilton as well.
Hey, Hamilton has a bad rap, but the downtown, I just drove up there like not too long ago, and it's a really nice, clean downtown.
I'll
they got a
that.
New brewery
yep.
right there by the river. So let's...
I didn't mean to poo-poo Hamilton. I you're right. They've got... It's a fine place. But I thought that was interesting, them dropping into the playbill and being like, and seeing an opportunity and taking it. Good for them.
Josh Smith, the city manager up there, does a good job. I think they've got some things going their way. So.
Yeah, they're owning
anyway,
it.
Anyway, back to
the
point.
Well, that's partially it. But my more So Cincinnati thing is my social media feed is full of everyone taking the same picture of their Hamilton playbill with the stage in the
you'll
background.
Never have to worry about me doing that.
Did we do it? Yeah, my wife and I did it. That's fine. I feel like it should be a thing when you walk in the front door. It just says, here's the link to download a photo of you from like the third row. So it looks like you had way better seats than you did. And it says, here's a photo of the Hamilton playbill with the third row seat, like right in front of the orchestra. So people will think you had great seats and you can send that out. And you don't have to waste your time trying to take the picture or anything like that. Because everyone posts the same picture whenever you go to see Hamilton. But I will say, beyond all of that, that baby lived up to the hype. I thought that I was going to hype it up too much in my own head, because I purposely kind of stayed away from trying to read a bunch of reviews about it. Or no, I just knew that it was obviously beloved and one of the greatest things of all time to come through Broadway. Yeah. So I was kind of like, I hope it blew my own expectations out of the water. I absolutely loved it. Do you know Jason Williams? There's a lottery every day where you can get a $10, of course, for Hamilton. Yeah. You can get a $10 tickets. I think they're like 40 or 50 of them they give out every day. You just got to put in for the lottery. I can only imagine how many people are in that. But
that's great.
I would totally go back. If we won the lottery, I'd pay triple whatever just to go back again because I thought it was awesome.
Good for you.
Yeah, I don't know.
To the thousands and thousands, the hundreds of thousands of people who follow me on my social media platforms.
Hundreds of thousands?
You know, just exaggerating.
Yeah, let's get a check on that.
The masses and the
fact check.
The millions.
PolitiFact.
You never have to worry about me taking a picture of the playbill.
No.
Because?
You won't be there.
I'm not a big fan of the arts.
Hate the arts.
I don't hate the arts because I've told you this before and I'll say it again. I love the symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not much for the performing arts of theater.
Yeah. I think even you would art like museums. Hamilton. I really do.
Really?
Yes. I really do.
I probably would.
It's really hard not to let. I mean, I think it's a really interesting story that not enough people know.
It's going to require me to leave my house, so.
Which we know is hard for you to do unless you're going to McDonald's. All right. Do you have a curmudgeon moment of the week, sir?
No, but I do have an update. My faucet, the tape of my
faucet. Faucet update!
Still holding strong.
Duct tape is still holding on. And I can say I can now back up your rant from last week about the Enquirer new bathroom faucets. I can confirm are terrible.
They're
constant state of waving in front of them. It's bad. It's bad.
I know. It's frustrating.
Well, I'm glad that your duct tape is holding up, though. That's great.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Man, this is a big update. I can't wait to find out what happens next
weird.
Week.
No, this is weird because my dad never calls me. And so I'm sitting at my desk last week, and it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I get a call from my dad. I'm like, ooh, this can't be good. And he's like, hey, just wanted to let you know, you better get that faucet fixed. I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking like he's going to drop some bomb on me or something, that something bad has happened. And
you get there and it looks just like
I just want to let you know, you don't want to let that thing go very long because if you, that thing gets frozen or busts, that's going to be expensive. I'm like, okay, Dad.
Okay, Dad. Well, I look forward to weekly updates on if it has busted or broken through yet. How long will the duct tape hold next week on That's So Cincinnati?
Dun, dun, dun.
All right. That is, we will push it forward to next week now. So, yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back next week as we're here every single week talking about whatever's going on in Cincinnati.
We're here every single week because you, our listeners, are
demanding it.
Demanding it and helping us stay here.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, we hope you would subscribe and let us come to you on your podcast platform of form of choice. We are on all of them. So pretty much whatever one that you want to be on, Google Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever your podcasts are, pretty much. So just search That's Cincinnati. Subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes. We always love that. And it helps. Helps us stay alive.
The reviews
here.
Have been great so far. Yeah. 4.5, 5 stars right now.
Yeah, we appreciate
that. We want 5 stars, baby.
And again, if you have an email, if you have a topic you want to talk about, if you have a That's So Cincinnati moment of the week, if you just want to tell Jason that you don't like his face on the promos, you can just send that to jwilliams@enquirer.com, and we will get to all of that. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to this week's episode of That's So Cincinnati. We will talk to you next week. Have a good one, everybody.